Welcome to Westerns with Dad. This is Matt.
And this is Dad.
And on this episode, we'll be talking about 1995's Dead Man, starring Johnny Depp, directed by Jim Jarmusch. This is a weird one, right, Dad?
Yep, I'll grant you that.
Yeah, this is a very strange film. Avant-garde, very bizarre in its concerns. I mean, it's fairly straightforward as a narrative. It's about a city guy from Cleveland who comes out west for a job and gets sort of involved in a lot of things that you would expect to see in a Western. Gets shot, gets chased, gets involved in gunfights and chased by bounty hunters, and becomes an outlaw over the course of the film. And that's what it's about narratively, but it's sort of a lot stranger than that would suggest. It's a much more difficult film to kind of explain or try to wrap your head around, I guess you would say. What was the main thing you would take from Dead Man, Dad? What would you say was what Dead Man is about?
It involves, for me, it involves some kind of spiritual journey or quest of the main character, Johnny Depp, who is shot at one point and is seriously injured. He's got a bullet in his chest. And it would appear that he's on the verge of death throughout the entire film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a journey to his ultimate end.
Yes. Uh-huh. I think it could even be described as a metaphorical, he is metaphorically dead from that moment. He gets shot early on in the film, and after that point, he is traveling through the afterlife, almost, you could say. Whether that's not exactly literally happening, or maybe it is, but it is a spiritual quest, in a sense, to the other side. He has a guide along the way. Characters that may or may not represent things. The reality is constantly in question. I guess. There's a way to read this film as straightforward. Like, nothing impossible happens, I guess you'd say. It's just the experience of watching it does not suggest that what you're happening is literally true. Even if it is, you know, it is a strange dreamlike film, shot entirely in black and white, and very concerned with philosophy and poetry, particularly William Blake's poetry, and just the experience of death.
Right.
I guess is what it would be about. It opens with the quote, "It is preferable not to travel with a dead man." Just leaves you with that right off. That's what, that's your headspace. Have at it.
is that from William Blake?
I mean, it must be, right? I don't think it's attributed in the film, but every poem in this, everything in this quotes William Blake incessantly. Yeah. Like, anytime somebody is musing or saying something that sounds like a poem, I think it's a fair bet that comes from William Blake. I'm not a big William Blake guy. I don't know William Blake. I haven't read a lot of William Blake. This film sure has. This film will let you know that it is a big William Blake fan. Johnny Depp plays a character named William Blake. He is a city boy from Cleveland coming out west for a job. How about this opening, by the way? The on the train.
Reminiscent of Sergio Leone.
Yeah, uh-huh. With the context of the rest of the film, it almost feels like, you know, that it's
An interminable journey.
Yeah, it's a very long, dialogue-free opening sequence of Johnny Depp riding on a train with a bunch of trappers and Western-type characters just sort of looking at each other. A lot of shots of the gears of the train moving. A lot of shots of Johnny Depp's character William Blake looking out the window and just feeling uncomfortable in his skin. And it goes on for quite a while. It sets the tone for the film, I would say.
That it does.
Yeah. You're watching an art film now. Get ready. Yeah.
I wasn't ready for it.
No?
No,
what were
I
you
wasn't
expecting
ready
from this? Something
I more? Didn't know what to expect. I mm-hmm. honestly didn't.
Yeah.
But I wasn't in the mood for it.
Fair enough.
The opening scene seemed interminable to me.
I think it's intentionally interminable.
Right.
It's long and off-putting immediately. I guess why a film would do that is an open question, but it's definitely an intentional choice to open this
way.
Well,
and I think the movie followed suit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is daring you to like it, I would say.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, I'll come out right now, Dad. I thought this was really cool. I really enjoyed Dead Man. I was very interested in this. I really, really dug that how weird this was, how unusual, how contemplative and philosophical and just out and out bizarre this was. And
I'll go with out and out bizarre, no problem.
Not concerned at all with the conventional things you would see in a movie or a Western. It's an entirely different deal. This whatever's going on here is it felt like a nightmare to me. It had a dream logic quality to it. I mean, it has a plot you can follow, but then, you know, the way scenes go together, there's a dreamlike quality to it all. The fact that it's in black and white makes it feel unreal in this way, and sort of beautiful, just even as it catalogs just destruction everywhere and death and decay and you know, things being burnt down or destroyed, and but even still, it like scenes will go on longer than you expect. Characters behave in ways that don't necessarily make sense, you know, that feel kind of unreal.
Right.
And and it, over the course of the film, it kind of creates a spell for me. You know, if you're not in the mood for it, you're not gonna want this. But I guess I was in the mood for it. I do have to admit, interminable is a fair way to describe it, though.
Well, and the scenes cutting from one to another, constant fade to black.
Yeah,
you
mid-scene.
Know?
Constant, or,
yeah, mid-scene.
Or 10 seconds after a scene ends sometimes. It's very, very strange. And they'll just cut to, like, they'll cut from one scene to another scene where you hear, like, one snatch of dialogue in the middle of a conversation between these other characters, and then you'll cut right out of that scene, go back to other characters that you already established. It's, yeah, confrontational cinema. A lot of people hate this movie. Roger Ebert hated it.
Yep.
One of the least engaged reviews I've ever read by Roger Ebert. I'd say 1.5 stars. It's basically just like, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then at the end he's like, I didn't understand it. It seems to be trying to say something. I didn't get it. And that's what he has for this. That was not uncommon.
he said regarding Neil Young's soundtrack, it sounded like he was just dropping his guitar every so often.
Let's talk about Neil Young's soundtrack.
Okay, I thought it was. So, I thought it was. It pissed me off, to tell you the truth.
Yes, yes. This is what I want to hear, Dad. This is
it.
Exactly
just pissed it. Me off because there was nothing particularly melodic about it, and it was jarring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it interfered with certain scenes. I think.
I thought that the soundtrack, okay, two things that can be true, I think, at once here about this soundtrack is that it created a tone and an emotional vibe that that absolutely defined the film, and it also was probably just Neil Young dicking around on a guitar.
Well, that's what it sounded like.
It didn't sound like he wrote anything. It just sounded like he was, you know, just sort of in a booth with a guitar screwing around, and they just kind of cut some of that into the film.
Right.
And it worked for me because it was so weird. It was so unlike anything else I've ever seen. I feel like it wouldn't work in most movies. In this particular film, it created something unique for me.
I don't know. I'd be going along in a scene, you know, and getting into the Indian and his whole, you know,
yeah,
metaphorical thing, you know, mm-hmm. and then the journey in, through death and to death, etc. And then all of a sudden there's a cha-chang, cha-chang.
Yeah.
And I'm, uh-huh. It just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, it's, I mean, on its face, it I understand exactly what you're saying. Yeah, this is I mean, it is deliberately atonal, and unlike most scores, I would say this is intentionally just kind of trying to mess with you and I guess create a mood of discordance and sort of unreality that it absolutely achieves. That you know, there it's barely music and more sound effects almost.
I'll go along with that.
Yeah, I mean, I was excited seeing it. It's like, oh, Neil Young score. What's this going to be like? Oh, it's going to be weird. It's going to be very, very strange. You know, feels like a drug movie to me. You know. Feels like a film that you're supposed to be on acid for or something. It's part of the acid western subgenre, which we'll talk about later. It's I don't really get what that is all about, but it very much feels like a film that is either the result of or something intended for use with drugs in some way. Even though it's not really concerned with drugs. It's sort of concerned with existential states of being, which I guess lends itself to drugs.
Right. Right.
And you know, it goes all in. Goes all in on that mood, on that tone. Start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
So in that train ride, in that long, long train ride that opens the film, we get the first cameo of the movie. This is a film loaded with cameos. So Crispin Glover now comes out of the train. This is the first cameo, and he is he's a guy who works on the train in some capacity. He throws fire, or throws wood or fuel into the engine, and he just comes straight to Depp and starts talking for no reason that really makes sense about his philosophy about perspective movement. How it feels like the mountains are moving while they stay in the same place, kind of stuff, and it's just strange. It's just immediately strange, and feels like something that, you know, that doesn't exist. You know, like this is a non-real interaction of some kind, a poetic interaction, if you will. And then it gets down to a little bit of exposition for us, which is just that Depp is from Cleveland in the Lake Erie area. He had a relationship fall apart, and you know, some debts in his family, and so has accepted a job out west. And so he's riding this train all the way out west to
the end of the line.
The end of the line, the town of Machine, which I love, by the way. I think that's a great name for a town. and that's all we got, you know. And Crispin Glover asks him, "Why are you coming all the way out here to hell?" And yeah, foreboding. And then everyone sees Buffalo outside the train, and they just start shooting at him. And Johnny Depp is alarmed. And then it's a smash cut to credits. Yeah.
Opening credits, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think these credits are great. They have sort of a bone font. And and they're sort of riding off into the darkness like the opening crawl of Star Wars or something like that. It's great. And this is a strange film, but it has the greatest cast. And that is what becomes apparent while you're watching these credits. Just like, he's in it, and he's in it, and he's in it. Oh, my God. Robert Mitchum? What is this?
Yeah. John Hurt, yeah.
And a lot of them, it's still a question at the end. Like, what was John Hurt doing in this? What?
Yeah.
Why did he show up for this? What? I want to see this movie on the big screen was the impression I took from it around this time. Just how impressive this looked. Well, he's walking into the town of Machine here, and shot in gorgeous, gorgeous black and white. This beauty of ugliness kind of place.
I thought the cinematography was great.
Mm-hmm.
I really did.
Yeah.
The black and white was unbelievable.
And for a film that I think that considering how many ugly things that are getting photographed in this, how many images of death and decay, I think the black and white makes it beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
It's a stunningly evocative visual palette for this film. Like it defines the feel of this movie that it's entirely monochrome in the way it is. I just love the look of this movie. I think it's gorgeous. You know, and even though it has no large sweeping vista shots, maybe a few, but very few. That birch forest that they come into looks pretty amazing, mm-hmm. I guess. But for the most part, it's just a lot of stark contrast, and it's stunning, stunningly shot film. At the least. This opening feels very Tim Burton-y to me, I guess, as well, because it's so, because of the black and white German expressionist kind of vibe of it, but also because Johnny Depp is wearing this Tim Burton-y looking suit.
Plaid suit, yeah.
Uh-huh. Going into this sort of weird industrialized western town that looks very designed, I would say, considering that how little of the film takes place in Machine. It had a real strong identity immediately in this opening crawl through there. He's going to his new job as an accountant at what is it, a steel mine or something? A mine of some concern. And this gets us to that John Hurt cameo, appearing as a mean actuary. he tells him he has no job, that the job has been filled because he took too long to get out there. And there's a sort of a Dickens vibe to this, too, I would say. Or maybe I just thought that because the boss is a man named Dickinson, it's counting house imagery, you know, it's very, very Scrooge.
Everybody lined up at their desks.
Uh-huh, yeah. And so, yeah, John Hurt's kind of a dick about it. Oh, no, your job's been failed. It took too long to get out here. And so then he's like, well, I demand to speak to the boss then. And they send him in to meet Dickinson, which is the Robert Mitchum character. In his last role, by the way.
This was his last role?
Yes, the final screen film credit of Robert Mitchum is this character in Deadpan.
Oh, no.
What do you think of this intro for Robert Mitchum, where he Depp goes into the room and nobody's there, and it's just a portrait of Robert Mitchum and a stuffed bear and a desk, and he's kind of looking around, then he turns around, and then Robert Mitchum appears out of nowhere with a shotgun pulled on him.
Yeah.
And just says, get out! And that's it. This is one of those strange kind of unreal scenes in this film that I wasn't quite able to quantify in any specific way. I don't know what they were going for here, I'm afraid.
No, I was at a loss myself.
Uh-huh. That dreamlike quality.
I mean, you could construe everything to be part of the dreamlike quality in this film.
Or the travel into the afterlife. I mean, honestly, from that train on, there would be a way to read this entire movie as a trip through purgatory.
Huh.
I mean, even the train could be the soul's journey towards the afterlife. The whole movie is probably the soul's journey towards the afterlife. I mean, if you were to put a thematic idea on this. That's as good as it.
It's interesting. I read one review saying that he thought Johnny Depp was comatose through the whole thing.
Yeah? Like?
That he was in a coma, but this was his, like, spiritual state of mind or something, that he was following this course to the afterlife.
I mean, it's unavoidable that is some, in some fashion, what the film is about. You know, I mean, there you can apply that literally to the bullet in his chest that is killing him slowly, or it could all be in his head very easily. I mean, that would make sense. The whole movie feels like a nightmare, or a dream of some kind. Yeah. You know, the environment and the way things happen here all feel like a dream. It feels like you're sleeping through half this movie, kind of.
Yeah.
Sort of in and out of reality on it. I mean, the sequences where you cut away from Depp might belie that, I guess. Simply because, you know, yeah, it's different point of view, but those have the same feel to them. All the stuff with the bounty hunters feels fake too, or not fake, but like unreal. I guess you'd put it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so down on his luck with nowhere else to go, he goes into a bar, you know, to get drunk, and runs across a flower girl. I guess is how they call her, Thel, which is also a William Blake reference. It's a character he wrote a poem about.
What's? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She is. He meets her when she is thrown into the mud by an old cowboy who tells her, "We liked you better when you was a whore," and. And he chivalrously helps her up and takes her home. I didn't recognize this actress as the only non-famous person in this film. I feel like I thought she was pretty effective though. I liked Thel's stuff.
Who is it?
Movie. Oh boy, let's find the name. her name is. Millie Avital.
Hmm.
And,
nope, doesn't ring a bell.
No, she provides him with a sort of a visual motif that, continues on, which is this paper flower that she gives him, and he wears on his lapel the rest of the film. Let's see, what else has Millie Avital been in? I found her striking in this. Not much. She was in Stargate and a few other movies, also from the mid-90s, but has been constantly working on TV since. Okay. Hmm. Well, yeah. Working actress. Never breakout success, but always successful. Yeah. She's good in the movie. So she hooks up with Johnny Depp. This feels dreamlike and ghostly, too, you know? She's got a gun under the bed. She's, why do you have this? He asks, because this is America. and then we get another cameo. Gabriel Byrne shows up. Gabriel Byrne, being her ex-boyfriend, who's come back to her. You know, he shows up looking to make amends. He's got a present, and only to discover in bed with Johnny Depp. And he is heartbroken. She tells him that she never loved him. It's a real ugly scene. He pulls out a gun, and now, is he trying to shoot her? Or is he trying to shoot
Johnny? I thought he was trying to shoot him. Yeah. I thought he was trying to shoot him.
Well, he aims at somebody, and she kind of jumps in the way of Johnny Depp, takes a bullet through the chest. Johnny Depp returns fire and shoots Gabriel Byrne in the neck. And so they're both dead, but Johnny Depp has a bullet that has passed through Thel and lodged in his chest, which is centrally important going forward. This is what makes him the dead man, if you will. He is a... It is not removable. It is too close to the heart for them to remove this bullet, and it will eventually kill him. So it's sort of a death sentence that he has going forward here. Kind of like Iron Man. That's how I thought of it. And yeah, and so he jumps out the window of the hotel and takes their horse and leaves. And as he's leaving, a shooting star flies through the sky, which is maybe his soul leaving his body. And that's all kind of just intro. I mean, that's basically the setup for what actually Dead Man is. All this stuff in
the machine. So if that's his soul leaving his body, what's the rest of the movie about?
I guess it might be his life. No. Probably
not
his soul.
His soul after death? What happens to his soul after death? But there's interaction, though, with real humans.
Yeah, I mean, okay. We're getting into the sort of the larger thematic idea of what the hell is going on in Dead Man. It is, you know, I think we've said a few times, it seems to be a trip through purgatory to the soul's final resting place or destination. And, I mean, that's certainly the Indian nobody presents it as, and you know, it seems to be ultimately where he's headed. Is but the question of whether he is alive, waiting to actually die from this wound, or on some sort of metaphysical plane of existence, the journey through the afterlife to the underworld. A sort of a Virgil and Dante kind of thing going on, or what have you. It's very much open for interpretation.
Yep.
Even while there is a literal interpretation, which is just that it's, you know, that he's a guy who is going to die soon but isn't dead yet. So, we meet the antagonist of the film around this time as well. Which is bounty hunters that have been hired by Robert Mitchum. Robert Mitchum was Gabriel Byrne's dad, as it turns out, to sort of bring William Blake back to face justice, or just kill him. You know, because he gets blamed for killing Thel as well. You know, because he ran, and Robert Mitchum is kind of a madman in this. He cares as much about getting his horse back as justice for his kids. Sort of an underdeveloped character, but you know, it's I guess it's fun just to see Robert Mitchum show up and be this weird villain. But the bounty hunters that he hires, these are the actual antagonists of the film. Particularly the one played by Lance Henriksen.
Cole.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Lance Henriksen as an actor?
No.
Oh, I love him. He's great. He's a character actor. He's in a ton of B-movies. He was... He's in a lot of James Cameron movies, a lot of early Cameron. He was he's in Aliens. Huh. He's in The Terminator. He was almost played The Terminator, actually.
Is that right?
Yes, uh-huh. Before Schwarzenegger. The idea being that he looked like a normal guy, you know, that he would blend in more. Even still, he's a striking individual. He's a very leathery, very dangerous-looking man. He's in a ton of movies. He often appears in Westerns, actually. He's in The Quick and the Dead. He's in Appaloosa. Plays very similar characters.
He's in The Quick and the Dead, huh?
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. He is
one of the contestants.
Exactly. He is the gambling sort of gentleman gambler one. He's got like a shoe polish shine mustache, and he's got spats with like Ace of Spades on him and stuff like he's a sort of a dandy. It's a funny performance. We gotta do Quick and the Dead sometime. That's a goofy movie.
It is.
Much easier to wrap your head around than Dead Man, for sure. also one of these bounty hunters here is Michael Wincott, another similar character actor from the 90s. You recognize him at all?
Nope.
He plays the trapper here, the dude with the coonskin cap and the mustache. He was Sir Guy of Gisborne in Kevin Costner's Robin Hood.
Okay.
He's in the bad guy in a lot of things. He's in The Crow. He's in one of the Alien movies as well. He's in Strange Days. He's good. He's a real good actor. And he's a lot of fun in this, I think. he's the one that talks, because the other two bounty hunters are sort of taciturn, sort of Lee Van Cleef-ish, right. You know.
Right.
Yeah, these guys have a real Sergio Leone vibe to them.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
younger black actor, Eugene Bird is the guy's name, playing Johnny the Kid. I didn't recognize him. He makes out the third of them, and yeah, Robert Mitchum hires him to go catch Johnny Depp. What do you think of these guys, Dad? They're in the movie quite a bit. Where were you on them?
I liked the combination. I thought it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I like Cole's character a lot.
He's good.
Yeah. And
might be my favorite performance in this. No, that's Xavier Shape, but he's quite good. Mm-hmm.
Cole's character was great. I thought what Winlock is that was.
I think so. Whitlock. Yeah, it sounds right.
Whitlock.
Yeah.
Whitlock.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was good as well.
Yeah.
Johnny the Kid didn't have much of a part.
No, not really. Okay, so after being introduced to them and that great scene where they're like. They're playing around with each other before Mitchum comes in, drawing the guns.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah,
faking each other,
drawing the gun on the portrait,
doing quick draw competitions to draw on Mitchum's portrait. That's really one of my favorite scenes in this movie, actually, which is just like it's about a minute of actors screwing around, but it's great. okay, so we meet them. We met all the exposition is taken care of. Now we meet. Probably the most important character in this thing, which is Nobody the Indian. Right? This is unlike this all-star cast, everyone in this is famous for the most part, or at least familiar. A lot of familiar, odd character actors popping up throughout. This guy, Gary Farmer, is the actor's name, playing Nobody the Indian, or Exabache, in his people's tongue,
yeah.
Meaning. Man who talks a lot with and says nothing, I guess.
Yeah.
I immediately found him to be the most engaging character in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah. I mean, he has personality. He's He has the best dialogue. A lot of it is written in rhymes. A lot of it is rhyming couplets or direct quotes from William Blake.
Right.
Some are born to sweet delight. Some are born to endless night. Repetitions like that over and over.
Yeah.
He's trying to pull the bullet out of Depp's chest, basically. Depp wakes up to find this happening. So, what is he doing? What is this Indian doing? Nobody. Why is he involving himself in this?
He's the facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
For Depp's journey.
Yeah. Now, is it as simple as, like...
Don't ask me what that means exactly.
He sees, it's a soul near death. My purpose is clear. Like, because, you know, why does he involve himself at all is what I'm wondering. Is it just because he's a sort of a poetic soul? I mean, I guess...
Well, he thinks that Johnny Depp is the real William Blake.
Well, the reincarnation of, at least. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He seems to believe he has a classical education. He was sent to London. This Indian, as we find in backstory, Xabache was sent out to London. He's captured by white men and sort of like traveled around with them, sort of almost like a circus freak. And they ultimately sent him to London, where he received an education and became a huge fan of the poetry of William Blake. Which Johnny Depp's character, William Blake, is unfamiliar with. I found that unbelievable. as a huge William Blake fan, he believes that this character Johnny Depp is playing is the reincarnation of William Blake. And as a result, feels sort of a sense of obligation towards him. How am I doing?
Reincarnation, because William Blake died in 1827.
Yeah, exactly.
and the film takes place sometime mid-late 1800s.
Yeah, it seems very post-Civil War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As far as one can tell. You know, they're not in the way of like nailing down timeline here.
Right.
Or place. It's somewhere out in the frontier is essentially where this movie takes place, at the end of the line. Yeah. So most of this movie is scenes of these two groups of characters traveling. Most just sort of interacting, having exchanges, conversations, dialogue one with the other. As they cross through the frontier. And, you know, you're getting character out of this. You're talking to, mostly, I would say, nobody is establishing who he is, you know, through conversation. You learn a lot more about him than you do about Depp in this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then that will cut, you know, like we were saying, mid-scene sometimes, just over to the bounty hunters to see what they're up to. Which is almost always just Michael Wincott talking just for the purposes of talking. I would say that the most interesting stuff is all based around Nobody and, you know, like learning his backstory, learning his perspective on stuff like that. You know, how he speaks, how his appreciation of William Blake. Depp just seems to be along for the ride. He's convalescing. He's, you know, he's sweating. He doesn't know where he is. He's kind of waiting to die a lot of the time.
yeah.
It's
true.
And yeah, the film gets taken over by Gary Farmer as Nobody for a long amount of time. More F words in this than most Westerns, I'd say. Quite a few. Not since Deadwood.
Except for Deadwood, yeah. Of course.
So, did you have a favorite sequence in this midsection of the film, this sort of lengthy ramble that is the middle of this movie?
I liked it when he took over Johnny Depp's glasses.
Oh, the drug trip, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The drug trip.
Uh-huh.
That's right. In fact, he even sees Johnny Depp as a dead man.
Ah, that is such a cool image. That's one of the most striking moments in the movie, I believe, is nobody uses some peyote to go on a vision quest and looks over at Depp and just sees a skull, just a talking skull for a face. And it's the kind of image that, you know, just sticks with you. I feel like if I think about this movie 6 months from now, I'm going to think of that scene where Johnny Depp has a skull face sitting around the campfire. Very grim Prairie Tales, wouldn't you say? There's a couple of grim Prairie Tale moments in this movie, that just incredibly violent moments that you're just like, whoa, didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, I thought Gabriel Byrne was the storekeeper, but he was the Robert Mitchum's son, huh?
Yes, Alfred Molina is the storekeeper.
That's right.
Yes. That's right. I love the scene where they happen upon a camp of, I guess, bandits. It seems like they're bandits or something like that. And it's Iggy Pop, Billy Bob Thornton, and Jared Harris, Richard Harris's son, a British actor. Just this bizarre scene, like where they're just sitting out here. And they sort of spy them in the distance, and you know, and nobody's like, "Hey, why don't you go? You go talk to them. They're white men like you, and I'll observe." And it's Iggy Pop, dressed like an old lady, like
go figure.
Just inexplicably dressed like an old woman, talking to Billy Bob Thornton as a mountain man and Jared Harris and. And he's telling them stories about Nero and the persecutions of the Christians in Rome. And I mean, it's a complete non sequitur, and it's a very, very strange scene where Depp just comes up to them and he's just like, I smelt there are beans. I need some beans. And they sort of swarm around him, and they're sort of nice at first, but then they become sort of bizarrely touchy-feely with him.
He's mine. He's mine. I saw him first.
Yeah. They love his hair.
Yeah.
Love his hair. They start stroking his hair and then become sexually possessive of it. Yeah. And how do you get that result? You see, my hair is just like, it's like black hay. I can't get anything here. Well, yours is so smoky. It's like a girl's. And yeah. And they come to blows over this, you know? They pull guns on each other, like, who will sexually possess Johnny Depp here? It's a very weird, very unreal scene. And, you know, the whole thing seems very avoidable, but nonetheless, I mean, they kind of lash out at each other, and then, of course, nobody pops up, and he's, you know, he cuts Billy Bob Thornton's throat, And they just wipe out these guys. Is this where Depp starts killing people?
Yep.
Yeah.
He gets one of them.
At some point, Depp, along the way, Depp just becomes a murderer. Just knows how to kill all of a sudden. I thought this was a little out of nowhere.
And, you know, initially when he shot Robert Mitchum's son, he took him 3 shots to get him.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
But... that ends. He becomes very deadly with the 6-shooter.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden.
Yeah. I don't know how or why. Part of his soul's journey, I guess, is to become really good at shooting people. I guess this is playing with just Western tropes and characterizations at this point, right? I mean, this is essentially, this is just part of the Western story. It's like, the tenderfoot becoming an outlaw, being his part of his arc.
Yeah,
but yeah,
it's interesting that the Indian, that nobody actually asks him if he killed the man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what significance that has. Why would nobody need to know if he killed him or not?
I mean. could it be? I mean, I think it's almost a fool's game to be, you know, to try to answer the questions that this, like, thematic questions that come up here. Because I don't get the sense that there is an answer to this film. You know, it's not a puzzle to be solved, necessarily. It's a rumination on many things, including the Western and Western tropes, and you know, it's sort of playing around with those things in the face of sort of an existential outlook on the afterlife. And but yeah, he's quite clearly a killer, Johnny Depp, as it turns out. I mean, that part of his story is to become a killer, to become this outlaw, you know.
Right.
I don't know what that has to do with his soul's journey, though. Right. I don't know. Maybe we're just
and
being
why it's
dumb.
Important and why it's important to the Indian to find out whether he killed a man or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because the Indian has some sort of role as his spiritual guide. Obviously, I mean that's almost explicit. He's sort of the Virgil to his Dante or something like that. But he's also encouraging it. He's encouraging that Depp become this killer in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Anyway, there's elliptical questions in this, you know? Just sort of things that are just left out there for you to sort of wrestle with. I think that would qualify. Meanwhile, with the outlaws, or not the outlaws, the bounty hunters, what's going on with them is... they discover that they've taken so long to kill Blake that Robert Mitchum is sort of outsourced, and there's wanted posters everywhere, which angers everyone. They're all pissed about that. And Cole, Lance Henriksen, and he's, you know, he's been established as the crazy one, I would say. Michael Wincott has a scene where he's kind of trying to play everyone off against each other, and he's it sounds like bullshit at the time, but as it goes on, you begin to think maybe not. Talking about how he killed his parents and, you know, Cole, that is, how Cole killed his parents and how Cole isn't to be trusted and he might be a cannibal and stuff like this. It sounds like bullshit. No, Cole's really nuts. Cole's super crazy. He ultimately kills both of these other guys. Johnny the Kid and Michael Wincott, kills them both and eats them, or at least eats Michael Wincott.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a hell of a scene of him sitting at a campfire eating a human arm. I down to the bone. That's another one of those moments in this film that I'm going to close my eyes and think of sometimes. Just like, God. Lance Henriksen eating an arm. Yeah. That was a real whoa moment for me. I was like, goodness. that was after the religious icon thing, though. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, jeez.
Okay.
That was after Johnny Depp killed a couple of marshals, right?
Yes. Marshall Lee and Marshall Marvin, actually.
Leave.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I didn't catch that.
Coincidence or no? Clearly not. I feel like all the illusions in this movie are never coincidences. You know, they are also hunting down Johnny Depp. They come across him in the out in the desert, and he says, "Hey, they're like, hey, are you William Blake?" And he's like, "Do you know my poetry?" And he shoots him. Or he shoots one of them, the other one accidentally shoots the other with his shotgun.
Right.
Yeah. And so this is more Johnny Depp just killing guys now.
Yep. He's gone. He's all in now.
Yeah, exactly.
On the outlaw thing.
He's wearing that face paint around. Right. He's just looking like death,
it.
Basically. He's got a much cooler coat all of a sudden.
Oh, he got it. You got it from the one of the guys they killed around the fire, the beans guy.
So, after Depp kills these guys, leaves them out there. Cole and Michael Wincott show up, and they're like following his trail now. So they see the corpses and you know that there's other guys looking out for him. But the main thing about this scene is that one of the guys, one of the sheriff's marshals, has fallen onto the ground in a fashion where it looks like there are sticks, creating an aura of like that you would see in artistic representations of the saints. Coming out of his head, and he said, "This looks like a religious icon," and then uses, you know, with his cowboy boot, just crushes the guy's skull. To what end? To what end is this in the movie? I don't know. It's very strange. This is an occasionally very gruesome film. Like, there's some shocking violence in this movie every now and then. Just like, why? What? What is that in here? And this would be the prime example of that. It is quite a head squish. So this, as Cole kills
Cole's defiance of religious norms, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone's defying religious norms here. But yeah, that it is a bit of a blasphemy, I guess. And Cole is the devil. I mean, Cole is just the... He's the most evil character in this, which would make you think that this is building to some sort of confrontation between William Blake and Cole. No, it's not.
Which is one of the big disappointments for me.
Yeah. Okay. The ending is quite a thing. We're real close to it. There's some other stuff happening. I mean. Depp is on his own at this point. Nobody has left him to kind of have his own spiritual vision quest, you know. I believe he was drugged, right? And, you know, this is... he finds, like, the baby deer, like, that's been shot in the neck, which he, like, sort of just, like, lies on the ground and cuddles with. It's... A lot of strange moments like that. Finds nobody having sex under a bear skin. This was This took a while to kind of grasp what I was seeing. It just looks like a monster for a while because they're, you know...
I thought it was a bear at first.
Yeah, It's... You get a full-on ass shot for nobody, which is, you know, you don't often see ass shots for men his size in movies. they anger the girl, and nobody follows her off. You know, it's... Just a lot of weird little episodic moments happening. I feel like the plot of this movie, you know, the actual plot would make for a very conventional Western if you wanted to do it. Like, if you wanted to tell this character's story in a normal way, it would make sense. It would be a very straightforward, very traditional Western, you know, which is the tenderfoot character kind of coming out and being, you know, forged into a badass by the crucible of the frontier. And,
right.
You know, becoming a stone-cold outlaw over the course of the movie. And that's the actual narrative of Dead Man. But, I mean, it's so much, so wrapped up in this weird metaphysical tone and presentation that you barely even register that's what's going on. Yeah. wrapping up here, we get to they find that the trading market, you know, the Alfred Molina running he's playing a racist shop clerk that hates Indians, and it's implied tries to sell nobody blankets with smallpox on them. Because that's what they did, right. Yeah. And what do you make of this scene? I think it's just a good little acting scene. I don't get what's going on, other than Johnny Depp kills a few more people.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I got from it. I mean, it's just an additional killing.
Yeah.
An additional development of the character is Johnny Depp is going further down that road.
Mm-hmm.
The murderer's road.
Yeah, I mean, this is more just like, I guess it's still defense at this point, but it, you know, this it's feeling more just like straight outlaw kind of he's becoming the outlaw that he's,
that he's portrayed to be on the wanted posters.
Yes, exactly. And he gets shot again at this point. It seems like that might be the one that kind of does him in. He's done after getting shot this second time, and it's sort of in the back, but he's out. Nobody loads him into a canoe, and they just float down a river. And he looks like he's about done at this point. And, death's door. It becomes very dreamlike at this point in the movie,
Right.
If it wasn't already, now it's just like, now it's just Depp noticing things as he sort of fades in and out of consciousness. And a lot of it's, like burning villages and stuff like that, and desolation all around him. It looks gorgeous in black and white, but it's unmistakably, kind of a dark and decayed. He's taking him to a town, an Indian village.
Indian village, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I thought looked very Pacific Northwest, actually.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, I take it to mean that they are in the Pacific Northwest by the end of this film.
That's what I took it as.
I mean, it seems like they're at the Pacific Ocean at the end. Yeah.
Unmistakable Pacific Northwest art.
Yeah, looks very Kwakoodle or Tlingit. They got that big eagle head that opens up, that eagle face door. That's cool, huh?
Right, very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know what we do at this Indian village. It seems like nothing. He's just kind of showing off his friend William Blake, but as he readies for death kind of deal.
Well, he says that there's a guy there at the village that is the greatest maker of sea canoes.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's what it is. Uh-huh.
So to prepare him for the final trip on the sound.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Or on the ocean.
And that's what it is. It's they're preparing Depp for his final journey into the afterlife. And this is stopped being sort of thematically what's been happening the whole movie and become literally what is happening, because he is, he's clearly dying. And they are, preparing him for death. And it's sort of like a Viking funeral kind of deal. It'll light him on fire. But otherwise, they're putting him in a boat and just shooting him off into the Pacific Ocean to pass away. Which is exactly what they do. Lay him on a bed of straw and he just ends up floating into the afterlife. And then Cole shows up and he and nobody kill each other. Yeah. And that's it. And then Johnny
Depp
just
dies.
Yeah. he just dies as his boat sails off into the ocean. So, a brief word about what's going on here with this final confrontation, as it were, between Cole and nobody and Blake. Why is it done this way? What is the
I think that's a nod to convention.
Well, clearly there has to be some sort of confrontation. But
right. We need to see what happens to Cole.
Yeah, But I mean, the entire reason to set up Cole in the way he has been set up is for a confrontation, for a conclusion. And it completely reneges on that. As Depp is floating away, he tries to warn nobody that Cole's behind him, but he's too dying to do so. And they just swing around and shoot each other. And that's the last we see of those characters in the distance, both of them crumpling to the ground.
Falling to the ground.
Which is not a satisfying resolution for either of them, in my mind. Yeah.
Well, the whole movie you're expecting some kind of confrontation between Johnny Depp and Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But then, if there were a confrontation, we couldn't have the sail off into the sunset.
Sure you could. Just do it 5 minutes earlier. Have him kill Cole instead of Alfred Molina's brand new character who shows up at the end to just be a slight racist and then get killed. That's, But again, that's more conventional than this movie is interested in doing. Like, it doesn't give a shit about that. It's you know, it's and it's striking. I can't say that I didn't have a reaction to the movie ending that way. And it wasn't even so much that I was mad that it did. It's just that I didn't understand why it did. You know, the significance of it was lost on me, and it made me feel stupid. And that I don't like that. Although, I mean, that could be true of a lot of this movie. This movie is, you know, it is never going to extend a hand to you to tell you what's going on. Beyond just the larger thematic stuff that I think is unmissable about the, you know, the soul's journey into the afterlife. So, where do you land on Dead Man ultimately, Dad?
Well, I thought it was interminable. I thought it went on for a long, long time. Neil Young's soundtrack bugged the hell out of me. I thought the cinematography was great.
Yeah.
I love the character of Nobody.
Yeah. Hey, there was a specific.
I thought Johnny Depp was good, but not. But his character was kind of sleepwalking through the film.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's intentional.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't make for great acting.
Yeah. I found Johnny Depp quite striking. This was my favorite era Johnny Depp, you know. This was when I was a big, really enjoyed what he was doing and thought everything he did was pretty fantastic, you know. So I like coming and seeing Johnny Depp of this era, you know. I like.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see these kind of performances from him anymore, you know. It's not quirky. It feels more understated. I like him in this. I think he's effective, as it were. Gary Farmer.
Well, I think he's effective. I think he's effective. But,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
In a strange sort of way.
This is a film that we've been asked a couple times to take a look at. Suggestions through email from Jonah and from Carlos. I wanted to thank you both for these recommendations. I've been excited to take a look at this for some time. I'd never seen it before, so I was kind of thrilled, and I knew that this would be a weird one for you, Dad. And it was didn't feel like your cup of tea, but you know, at the same time, I was curious what you'd come up with for it. No, yeah, you seem to be mostly just irritated by it.
No, there were aspects of it that I thought were great. Like, yeah. I say, the cinematography was great, and the Indian character, Nobody, was terrific. The spiritual quest was not totally lost on me.
It's hard to miss, you know, like as to defining it in any legitimate way, that's tough. But it's quite clearly what they're after, you know.
But there's a lot of room for interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't feel like I have a handle on what's going on exactly in this movie. I want to watch it again, though. I mean, this is a movie, like, to be honest, I've been very busy lately. And I was late to watch this movie before we got the chance to talk about it. I only got around to it yesterday, and after I watched it, I was like, I wish I'd seen this last week so I could have watched it again. I wanted to experience this movie again so I would have had a stronger idea of what to speak about for this.
I don't think I could have made it through it again.
Oh, man, I'm definitely going to see this again in the next 6 months. I was very struck by this film, and I thought it was cool. I just thought this was a really effective, really cool movie that challenged me, and I like that it is so unique and so unusual. I certainly appreciate the Condor opinion, though. speaking of our
how many stars do you give it?
Oh, Dad, I'm giving it 4 stars, 4 out of 5.
Wow.
What are you giving it?
2.5.
Yeah, okay.
I identified with Roger Ebert a little bit.
I understand that. I think that is a 100% legitimate reaction to this film. I think most people probably would. It's not for everyone. It's defiant, confrontational to an audience. Neil Young's score, ultimately, big no for you?
Big no.
Okay. What would you say was your favorite cameo in the whole thing?
I always love Crispin Glover. I think he's a great actor. I really, really like him.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's...
But
he's
John Hurt was good, too.
I'm going Iggy Pop.
You going Iggy Pop?
Yeah. That was great. Right. Would you watch more movies of this type, Dad? This is... I wanted to mention this. This is categorized as an acid western, which is... Okay, I'm going to read the Wikipedia explanation for acid western. I don't know if I buy it. This is listed as a subgenre on Wikipedia. I've heard it described a few times as such. It is, says here, a subgenre of the western film that emerged from the 60s and 70s that combines the metaphorical ambitions of critically acclaimed westerns like Shane and The Searchers with the excesses of the spaghetti westerns and the outlook of the 1960s counterculture. Acid westerns subvert many of the conventions of early westerns to conjure up crazed versions of autodestructive white America at its most solipsistic, hankering after its own lost origins.
Wow.
I don't think that means much of anything, to be honest. I can't really wrap my head around that. I feel maybe there's a larger, longer article I could read that would try to... that could explicate that better, but...
I'm still trying to remember what solipsistic means.
Solipsistic. You know what? I don't want to like try to define it and then screw it up, you know? So I'm just going to straight up tell you the definition of solipsism, which is the view or theory that the self is all that can be known to exist.
Okay.
I don't think that quite describes Dead Man.
No.
I mean, it's certainly centrally concerned with one soul's journey, but, you know, we're out of his perspective often enough that,
Right.
Uh-huh. It is a fascinating philosophical idea, though, solipsism.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of crazy people believe, that they're the only one person that actually exists. That's...
And everybody else is a mirage, huh?
Yeah, that, like serial killers believe that. That's a real thing. Uh-huh.
Wow.
They're the only real person in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. I'd kind of like to see a solipsistic western, something. I wouldn't call Dead Man that, but that it would be... I know. High Plains Drifter might be that. Interesting. So again, thank you for those that recommended Dead Man. I was delighted to find such a weird, unusual film to talk about on this. Dad, maybe less so, but I, you know what, Dad, I'm glad you had to do it. I'm excited by that. I mean, the idea is to look at the breadth of the genre. Look at all that the genre has to offer. And, you know, you can't talk about Westerns without talking about acid Westerns, of course. You're losing a crucial part of the pie, then.
acid
so Western. I recommend it. Dad doesn't. Thank you for listening. You can visit us online at westernswithdad.com, or you can email us at westernswithdad@gmail.com, where you can make suggestions or recommendations as to movies you think we should watch and talk about, or any questions that you might have for us, we'll answer on the air, as we did today with Dead Man. So please visit us there. You can also leave reviews or ratings for us on iTunes. That helps increase the visibility of the podcast. Dad, we just received our first negative review on iTunes.
Uh-oh. What did they say?
We laughed too much and... didn't understand some of the intricacies of Lonesome Dove, which, you know, well, fair, okay. I would say, you know, if you have a negative opinion, maybe not on iTunes, but you know, hey, it's up to you. It is you know, free to do as you wish. And please, any response you feel like making, we're interested in hearing. Thank you for paying attention to us for Dead Man. On the next episode of Westerns with Dad, we are going to be doing both versions of True Grit. We are going to be talking about the John Wayne original and the Coen Brothers remake of True Grit next time. So that'll be all right. That'll be the first episode of December. And yes, also we are we're still trying to figure out what our Christmas episode will be. A Christmas Western. There's not a whole lot of them. If you have any great ideas, we'll love to hear those as well. I believe that would be it. Thank you very much for listening to Dead Man, and we'll be back next time for True Grit 1 and 2.
Thanks, everybody. Adios, amigos.
Bye.